Welcome back, everyone, to Blind Bargains Cast, episode 72. That guy over there is not Joe. He happens to be JJ, because I happen to be Joe, and we're back here with you for another wonderful week.
You,
and let's
you know
get this
who you
right
are?
Out of the way. I do not.
Do you know how to spell your name?
I was in a truck for 1,100 miles, and I am very much in the process of trying to remember what state I'm sitting in at the moment. There were lots of states that went flying by. So I am in a state of confusion.
Confusion, yep, there is that joke, of course. The state of confusion. Uh-huh.
Ball the state of confusion, of, not to be confused with Love and Rockets at all. So, you know, I would also confuse any other Braille display with that of Hims. Hims, our lovely sponsor, who is bringing you this particular podcast, as well as some of the great NFB, ACB coverage of 2016. You might want to roll back in the feed and take a listen to some of that stuff.
Pretty cool stuff. Hims Lifestyle Innovation, thank you so much again for sponsoring the Blind Bargains cast this week, and we'll hear more about them a little bit later. It's a feature show because there really isn't much news, so we're bringing on some person named Ricky.
I might know that lady very well. She is going to come on board and talk about some of the things that we have been using around the house that have helped us kind of work things out. You've heard us talk about Task Easy before, and so we'll talk about some other services that we've been using recently. And hey, I also have to say, I was having to rent a moving truck, and I used the Penske website, which you can rent a truck through your Home Depot card. I didn't know that. Also, you have a budget truck, and I also used U-Haul, and most of them work fairly decently well with a screen reader. I, of course, didn't drive the truck, but I could rent the truck without
there yet,
having to.
The renting, that's good to know. I could look at some of those. Student haulers is one that comes to mind. That's because they're pretty cheap for local moves and things like that. I haven't tried out them specifically. But there might be a step
you might
up
be needing
just using
one of those
Craigslist.
Soon. So let's
it
see
could
what
happen. We have to keep. I'll have to pay attention to our own show. Patrick is doing a thing on an HD radio of sorts, which I haven't heard of, which would be good. So I'll have to listen to this segment too, coming up a little bit later. And
could
also
use that on the road.
Yeah, there you go.
If you actually have HD in the car and it didn't work and it was so depressing, it was like staring at me the whole time. It was like, plug your iPad in to get away from all this really bad FM radio. And I was like, why would you work? Why won't you work? You know, some people did say that as we moved to the news that they wish that Chicken Nugget worked better with Windows 10 Anniversary Edition. Well, lo and behold, there is a new beer battered breaded version of Chicken Nugget now available.
Version 4.2 is out as of a couple of days ago, and the biggest feature is a new key map. Now, a key map, which is essentially the list of all the keyboard shortcuts. If you had spent a whole bunch of time painstakingly updating your key map and creating your own hotkeys for Windows 7 or 10, back that up if you want to keep it, because this one is going to come all in and bring in its own new one, because most of the keys weren't working in Windows 10, and an anniversary edition made it even worse. I guess, like, for instance, there's a new hotkey. I believe it's Control-Win-D brings up the date and time box. Really, that needed a hotkey? Well,
that
Microsoft thought it did.
Useful. Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, I thought that was better for direct messages, but no, alas. So now Chris had to move that to something else along with a bunch of others. So the latest version of Chicken Nugget 4.2 is free. It fixes that. It fixes YouTube playing. It plays Vine videos now, which is an interesting little
addition.
Somebody
was saying AAC also if you feed it one.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it does a lot of other crazy audio formats and things like that. So good to see it still being updated. And there has not been a paid update since the beginning. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens someday. But at the moment, so $15, which is what we paid a while ago, and it's still being updated.
It's a lot cheaper than some Braille embossers.
Oh, let's see. How many copies of Chicken Nuggets could you buy for 23?
Grab Siri or Google now.
Cortana, I only have 5 assistants, so I don't know. This is an affordable embosser, Joe.
Pound. Yep.
Is it the one previously? This is Braille Norway, who is not known for their consumer embossers. They are known for the big embossers for the big companies, like Horizons for the Blind, or like a Braille Transcribing House would have.
Right.
So that's their market. They probably, I don't know exactly, but they're not selling these in the thousands.
I would think not. No. Not at this price.
No. But this is a discount. This is the 300 character per second Braille 300. and it's the updated version at the new price of $23,000. The old one, you say $23,000. I found a CSUN interview from 2013 where they were selling at $300 for $57,000, or at least talking about it.
Half price.
Over half price.
Jump right on that.
It's a Braille Embosser Groupon. Essentially,
yes. Essentially, but, you know, 10 note takers will get you an embosser.
I always wondered about this, and this kind of bridges that gap a little bit, because you have the $5,000-$10,000 embossers that do up to 100, right, maybe 120, and then there wasn't much. The Braille Box came out from Index, and that's what, in the 15,000 range, 17,000, I think. And it's kind of in this range. That's probably what they're going after with this, because otherwise, it jumps up to $50,000 or more. So it'd be like just having the really, really cheap cars and the Mercedes and nothing in the middle.
In between. So, yeah. Right. No midline econo van kind of all or nothing. Wow. That is crazy. But like you said, these are not going to be sold in the tens.
These last. No. Yeah. But these, and they last. They're intended to last 10, 20 years. So, you know, if you think about it that way, if you're printing Braille for 8 hours a day.
Printouts, maybe NLS guys. That kind of stuff.
NLS, yeah, you can see a lighthouse or, you know, places like that.
Or somebody with a really good GoFundMe page.
Yeah, it's bad enough for the
crowdsource.
I can't even get me started. I'm blind and I need an iPhone. Need? Well, I mean, it'd be nice. Anyway, that's a different topic for a different day. If you're blind and you might be pregnant, you're not pregnant, are you, Joe?
Last time I checked, no. I did look, but. No.
Oh, okay. Right, well, that's good. You may not have as much use for this, but someone who is pregnant may have a really keen interest in an ultrasound of their baby. And if you're blind, well, before it was just a picture. And there was a story about this several months ago about, I think, someone who did a one-off of a 3D printed ultrasound. I thought it was kind of a cool thing. So you could kind of feel what the baby looks like and feels like. But now there's actually a 3D printer company of sorts in Poland that is going to offer these to anybody who wants them. So if...
How cool.
Yeah. If you know someone in this situation, you send them a euro, apparently. And if you actually live in Poland, they will send you the 3D printed ultrasound. If you don't live in Poland, it'd be kind of crazy to try to send that through the mail. But they will send you the file after, you know, the 3D printed file that you can just take.
Yeah, so they convert it into the formats, kind of like taking a WAV file and covering it into
something. Yeah, the ultrasound comes in some weird file format that I've never heard of.
Right.
But it's all explained on the link in the show notes, thank gosh, because I have no idea. That's what it comes in. It's already a digital file, the ultrasound is. And they'll take that and they will convert it. They say they don't doctor it up. They're not going to, like, you know, add weird things to your baby picture. But they will send you either back the model.
He has four arms. Oh, wait. No, those are legs. Never mind.
That's twins.
Yeah, that totally different thing. There's all sorts of jokes that are coming into my mind that I am going to stay away from. But that is kind of neat because, like you said, it was kind of locked off there for a bit and being something that was, did you know somebody? And now for a service to be out there, I think there are going to be a lot of individuals that are really going to want that because that is like... Do you remember the practice of brassing the baby shoes, you know, taking the baby shoes and putting them in copper or brass?
So no.
Remember how big their feet are.
Maybe. I mean, I think of, now that you mention it, right, to preserve the...
How big their feet were at the time of, you know, one-year-old or two-year-old, what have you.
I can't wait for the kid in 5, 10 years to see, yeah, here's you at 20 weeks.
this is how big your foot was. Now here was your birth at YouTube. Come on, let's all gather around. It's Christmas time. Everybody come watch your birth.
Yeah, I'm glad there's no videos of me before I was 10.
Millennials have to worry about, not us old farts.
Yeah, they didn't have videos for you. There's some when I was young, but
35mm re-released, remastered.
Yeah, you miss out on this thing. You don't have the video of like you in the school play, do you? And if you do, I want to see it.
School plays, no, because those were truly home film cameras back then. So, no, most of that stuff, no. But there is, like, videotapes and stuff. Like, I've done interviews, like, with local news station and the like. So, I do have some of those floating out there in somebody's archives, which is kind of scary to think about. My wedding video was there. So, we did that. I had that. Been in a couple of people's wedding videos. So, those were... old VHS tape, so I would have to salvage that VCR that's hiding somewhere in order to even
probably good to convert them sooner than later.
That's the kind of thing is it might be recorded, but you know, the means to, in which to play that are slowly going away. I say that as I look at a box of laser discs that I brought with me from Texas, and I'm trying to find a home for, because I don't want to, you said eBay, and I was like, yeah, but I want them to go to a good home. I don't want to sell them. They were cool at the time when I sold home theater for a lot of money.
If you have a LaserDisc player and are interested in Joe's collection.
I imagine if I broke down, I could find a LaserDisc player. There's a lot of karaoke players still available from Pioneer in Japan and the like. But I just don't know
if they made them anymore. Okay. I wasn't sure about that.
It kind of really hurt when I saw Tron THX edition that I bought for $125 available at Walmart for $12. That was really hard on DVD. That was like 100% kind of whoops. Wow. The news that we don't have here, because we've learned, is that NVDA has reached RC status. So every time we've posted an article in show notes about go get NVDA while it's in release candidate phase, then they turn around like the day of or the day before.
So it's about to be out. It's about to be out.
If you really, really want the latest version of NVDA, head on over to their website and grab it, because we probably won't post something in show notes or on the website until it's official. We've learned. You guys have taught us NV Access. We understand.
Let's see here.
Uh-huh.
Highlights of this release are include the ability to disable individual add-ons. I always like that in Firefox, where you can I don't want to uninstall the add-on. I just don't want it running right now. So
which is different than Chrome, which says it's going to disable like almost every app ever imaginable. But you know,
significant improvements to reporting of colors, some Excel stuff, and a bunch of Word stuff. And some Braille display stuff, and I'm sure we'll have an article up either by the time the show is out, if not shortly after, because it's gonna roll out very shortly. But what we don't have in news this month or week or whatever we do with these shows, we make up for with other content. So it's more of a feature show, like I said.
Yep.
LaserDisc is in the past. Sorry, Joe. HD radio ? Well, that might not be so future.
Pizzas. They're the size of a pizza, but have video on it. And then you had to flip it over and watch the other side.
All right, let me snap you out of this
bit. Oh, sorry.
Patrick has something a little more modern, an HD radio. HD radios are kind of one of those things that never really caught on, but they do give you a chance to listen to a lot of different channels and things like that. And Patrick is on to talk about one that is pretty accessible. Coming up shortly, also, what do we have in last word? I don't know. You know what it's because you're going to have to wait.
Yeah, pretty much.
You're just going to have to wait for that in the so your feedback as well with Sound Off and Ricky as well. So stay tuned. But first, this from Hims and then Patrick. We'll see you soon.
Go make it happen with Go Vision, the new transportable video magnifier from Hims. With GoVision, you get all you'd expect from a transportable read, write, and distance magnifier with optical character recognition, plus the ability to enlarge and customize files, photos, and videos from your cell phone, tablet, or computer. Look at a slideshow of pictures from your vacation right from your thumb drive. Bring the world into focus with GoVision. For more information, call us at 888-520-4467. Visit us on the web at www.hims-inc.com and follow us on social media. Hims, lifestyle innovation. Hey everybody, this is Patrick Perdue, and today I'm going to review a radio.
Greetings everybody, and welcome to Playback, edition number 80.
No. This is the Blind Bargains cast. This is not Playback Magazine. Anyway, today I'm going to be talking about the Spark HD radio, which has a bit of accessibility. This is the Spark SHD-TX2. It's a portable HD radio. TX2, it kind of reminds me of my first ham radio, the Radio Shack HTX202. Oh boy. Oh, and by the way, that's Spark with a C, SPARC, not SPARK, the way you would think it would be. Anyway, the Spark HD SHD-TX2 is a portable HD AM and FM radio. According to Amazon, the dimensions are 6.2 inches long by 1.7 inches thick by 3.5 inches tall, and it weighs 1.1 pounds. Takes 3 AA batteries, so this is a portable radio, but it's not necessarily something you'd want to put in your pocket. You can, but it's a little big for that. The reason I got this radio is because I realized a few months ago that I didn't have a good radio anymore. I just didn't happen to have one around the house. And the merit of having an HD radio can be debated, but I never had one, so I figured I would try it. And this one happens to have voice assist. I think they call it voice assist, which is pretty basic accessibility, but it is some. It does speak a few things, so I'll show you how that works, and also review the radio in general. So first, I'll start off by saying that this radio actually has a pretty decent internal speaker. I've heard some Bluetooth speakers that are larger than this radio that don't sound as good as this radio does. With its built-in speaker, it's a little hard to show on the podcast, but I did put the speaker of the radio up to the microphone and record a short sample, and this is what it sounded like. Hello, girl, you are killing it. Body's banging and I am feeling it. The way I'm feeling, there's no concealing it. You're young, you find so magnificent. Go on, girl, let's go. Your body like orange and I am feeling it. The way I'm feeling, there's no concealing it. Why I. One thing that that recording doesn't show is when you're holding the radio in your hand, you can feel it more than you can hear it in terms of the bass reflex response, whatever you want to call it. It has a port in the back where some of the low frequencies come out, and you can really feel it. It's really not bad sound for the size. So before I turn the radio on and show you how it works, I'll just describe it a little bit. It's kind of, imagine a rectangle with rounded edges. On the front panel, we have on the far left a round speaker. Then we have a cursor cross, up, down, left, right. And these are the menu button on the top, the enter button on the bottom, and then seek left and seek right on left and right. To the right of that, we have a group of four buttons. There are two larger rectangular buttons, one on the bottom, one on the top, and then two small round buttons. The topmost rectangular button is a combination of the power button and the AM/FM button. The two small round buttons are tune up and tune down, which is different than seek up and seek down. And the bottom one, I honestly have no idea what it's for. Then on the right, we have another cursor cross of four buttons. Bottom is volume down, top is volume up, and then left and right are preset up and preset down. On the far right of the unit, we have a headphone jack, and down near the bottom, there is a lanyard thing. It doesn't seem to come with a lanyard strap, but it does have provisions to have one if you have one. On the back panel, we have a DC input jack, and just a little above that, we have the battery compartment for the three AA batteries. And of course, it has a traditional telescopic antenna. Okay, so let's turn this thing on. To do that, you press and hold the power button for half a second or so, and it should turn on, and we should hear radio.
Friday, September 2nd. Don't miss the biggest Labor Day party in Long Island. Shaggy.
Now, I don't have the speech turned on at the moment, so if I tune up, let's just seek up to a station where you can really hear the transition from analog to digital.
Giving away my age here, but I don't care. Thinking too much.
My favorite station.
Plays the music I like. Z. And yeah, I dance in the car a little bit.
100. Oh, there we go. It went digital. And this is not a very good digital signal, so it's going between analog and digital. All right, so now I'm going to turn on the speech. To do that, we press the menu button 7 times. The reason this is 7 times is because it's actually the 6th item in the menu list. By the way, the manual does list all the menu items in order, but it doesn't mention that the first time you press the menu button, you are actually taken out of the tuner screen, and you have to press it 6 more times to get to the 6th option, so you're actually pressing it 7 times. So to turn speech on, I'm going to press menu 7 times. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm going to press the seek up button once, and then the enter button. Now, when I press the tune up or tune down buttons.
Tune down. 100.3.
As you heard, it read out the frequency and
HD 1.
It also tells you when it switches to HD. So if I press tune up again.
Tune up. HD 2. In there. Tune up. 100.5.
Apparently that station only has 2 HD streams. That is essentially the accessibility, basically just reading the frequency, which is kind of unfortunate because there are other things it could do, like reading the, I don't know, the emergency alerts. By the way, those are turned off by default, which is great because if you leave them on, it will eat battery because the radio is always in standby. The emergency alerts, when they come in, will scroll across your screen, and there is no way to read those. So if I turn the radio off, you'll notice that it will say,
alert off.
Well, alert off. Okay, fine. That makes sense. I just turned off the radio. Well, let's turn it on again.
Alert off.
Huh? What? Alert off? I just turned it on. Well, that's for the emergency alerts. It just tells you if those are on or not, which is useful because it's not useful for us. Okay, so let's just find a station and just let it
seek
do something.
Up. 101.1.
There's WCBS.
HD 1.
At Route 46 Chrysler Jeep Dodge.
No. We won't do that. But
the 26.
I had the radio in kind of a dumb position, so you could sort of tell when it went to analog. It does some weird things with marginal signals. Marginal analog signals kind of get squished to mono and sort of sound a little bit strange because it's always going through a DSP. But if you have a good analog signal, it sounds fine. So if I go to HD2,
tune up. HD 2.
SpaceX rocket blew up Thursday when it was test fired on a launch pad at Cape Canaveral.
Well, it was Thursday. Such things happen.
Longtime volunteer firefighter from New York, Eric.
Alert off.
And that's a copy of 880 WCBS AM. I'll show you what AM digital sounds like here in a minute. For those who haven't heard it, it's kind of interesting. So let me turn this thing on, and I'll show you how presets work. It's pretty simple. And I'm going to set a preset specifically for an HD station.
Call 718-863-22.
So what we're going to do here,
plaque and
tune up HD
3. Wow.
I'll go to HD 3, 101.1 HD 3. Now, the reason I want to specifically set up something that isn't HD 1, which is always the same as the analog feed, is that I want to show you when you switch presets that you can jump straight to an HD, unless the signal is a little bit weak, and then it might have problems locking onto it. So to set a preset, it's pretty simple. Just hold down the up or down preset buttons. When you do that, it will beep at you. So now if I switch to the previous preset,
HD 2,
at point which
preset down,
and it's going to seek for a while.
97.1 HD 2.
Now, the reason it took so long to lock onto that preset is because it has to sit on the HD 97.1 in this case. It has to sit there for a while and wait for the HD streams to show up. This takes about 5 seconds. It's really not the fault of the radio. So let's go to the next preset.
Preset up.
Which is also an HD specifically. I think.
101.1 HD 2.
Scheduled departure, and then you get to bid.
Yep, so that's 101.2 HD 2. Not 101.1. Yeah, that's not going to work in this country. So if I go to the next preset, it's the next logical HD, so it's going to be fast about it.
Preset HD 3.
Beer on a Saturday morning.
Didn't even get a chance to say preset up. So let's do this. Let's go to 102. Whatever the next thing is, and set that as the next preset, and just call that HD 1.
Seek up HD 4.
No, I don't want that. HD
101.9.
And I'm not going to do it.
That works. I'll set that as the next.
What has happened in the Mets this year with injuries? It flat out sticks. It's not fun.
There we go.
If you're a fan of a team that wants
to. So now if I switch between this.
You don't want to see.
Preset down.
It'll take a while to get to the previous one that's HD.
101.1 HD 3.
Teams, they're
because again, it had to wait for the HDs to come up. Now, if I go to the next preset, it should be fast.
Preset up 101.9.
Because this is analog. This is not digital. Most of the stations in my market, by the way, are digital. You can go to hdradio.com, put in your zip code, or you can search by city or state, and it will show you everything in the market you want to look for.
That's the easiest.
Right, okay, let's go to AM, and I'll show you what that sounds like. There are two, actually four AM stations in my market that are digital, but I can really only pick up two of them well enough for the digital signal to show up. And that's WCBS AM on 880 and 1010 Winds. So let's go to, I think I have it set to 1010 on the AM. I'll press the power button, but not hold it in. Holding it in turns it off. Pressing it once switches from FM to AM. And it takes a little while to switch, too. Let's switch.
57. 1 0 1 0.
Ovarian cancer. And it read the frequency again.
Even in their 20s. There's no early detection test.
HD 1.
So know your risk factors, such as family history of cancer and presence of gene mutations like BRCA.
And it went to digital. Take control of your health. Now I'm going to show you why it's actually not a great idea to have speech on all the time.
Meanwhile,
if you haven't figured it out yet, every time you press the up or down tuning button,
tune up 1 0 2 0.
It says tune up, followed by the frequency, which is really annoying if you just want to quickly scan something like AM, for example.
Tune up. 1 0 3 0.
Yes, I know I pressed the tune up button. Oh, also the volume up and down buttons. If I press volume down.
Down.
And then press it more times.
Down.
More.
Down.
But if I press it faster.
Down.
Fortunately, it doesn't read it every time if you press it fast enough, but unfortunately, that's not the same for the tuning up and down. So I'll just turn the volume back up.
You're calling BZ,
oh,
right?
And you can't, by the way, change the volume of the voice. It does change with the volume, but I wish it was a little quieter sometimes. Anyway.
Tune up. 1 0 4 0.
So that's kind of annoying. I'm going to turn speech off by pressing menu 7 times, pressing seek left, enter. There we go. Now,
Super Class Car Limo Service, Compañía de Transportación Médica.
I can tune a little faster.
El Granollers is in straight sets to reach the third row.
La semana. Los espero este domingo de 8 a 10 de la noche, solo por WADO 128.
Yep, so having the voice on all the time is really, for me, only useful when I'm going through presets and or when I'm in an area that I'm not all that familiar with and using the seek buttons to go to the next and previous available thing. So it's nice to have, but I don't keep it on all the time. Let's turn it back on.
Tune up. 1 2 8 0.
Personas con empuje. Comprometido.
Tune down. 1 2 7 0.
So that essentially is how this thing works. I'll turn it off now.
Alert off.
And now I'll tell you my findings about the radio in general. As an actual radio, it's pretty nice, actually. A lot better than I expected it would be. As far as the front-end sensitivity is quite good. You do, however, have to be careful because when you plug in headphones or something into the headphone jack, the sensitivity of the receiver does change. I think it's actually a little better when you don't use headphones. One thing I don't really like all that much about this radio is that it's pretty hard to keep it stable on a flat surface. If you want to set it on a desk or a table or something, you have to be pretty careful, especially if the antenna's up. It has these plastic ridges around the top and the bottom, these kind of ridgy things, and the radio sort of sits on those equally well or not so well, either upside down or right side up. But it's, like I said, not the most stable thing in the world. I wish they would have put bigger feet on it or a kickstand or something. That is slightly annoying. Overall, I found the battery life to be pretty good. I'm actually still using the original batteries I put in this thing when I ordered it back in April or so. I read some reviews that people complained about the battery life, and most of those people actually had the emergency alerts on. So for us, it's really just a battery drain. This radio sells from between $50 and $60 on Amazon, and when I bought it, it was closer to $60, but when I looked recently, as of the time of this recording, it was around $50. So I think that's a pretty good value for what it is, how it sounds, the sensitivity of it, and of course the little bit of accessibility that it does have is nice. It could be more, I wouldn't complain if it were, but it's nice to have, at least. Oh, one other slightly disappointing thing about this radio, it has language switching for the display, but the languages do not switch for the voice. Before I end this, let's see if I can find a digital-only stream that is on a marginal carrier. I just want to show you what it sounds like when a digital stream drops out and it doesn't have an analog to fall back to.
96.9.
Okay, I've got the radio on again, and I'm going to tune to 97.1 HD2, which for me is a little bit weak, and because it's an HD2 station, when it drops out, it will just drop out. If you are on an HD1 station and it drops out, it will fall back to the analog feed. But on a digital substream, no, there isn't one. So
tune up 97. Tune up 97.39. Tune down 96.9.
This is why I kind of like having speech off, because it slows things down. All right, let's go back to 97.1.
Tune up 97.1.
Wait for it to come up with the HDs.
HD1.
There we go. All right, now let's go to HD2 with the antenna down and put the radio kind of on the floor.
Tune up. HD2.
Yeah, that's not working out so well.
Alert off.
So that's the Spark HD SHD-TX2 in a nutshell. If you have any questions about how this thing works, or if you just want to contact me, feel free to do so. The best way is probably by Twitter. You can get to me by @BorisInABox. So that's @BORRISINABox.
You know, we get a lot of emails saying, why don't you have Ricky on the show more often? So, you know, we thought we would find a really good reason to have Ricky Enger on our podcast this week, talking about home repairs and taking care of your house. Ricky has done a lot more of that than I have, playing with different services to help you fix up your home, and is here to tell us all about them. Well, welcome back to the podcast.
Yeah, it's always good to be here. There's no accounting for taste for all of you guys who want me back, but I am very happy about that. Like I said, always good to be here. Yeah, been looking into doing some home repair type things because it's one of those things where if you and no one you know has these skills, what do you do? You know, for some people it's, well, I can... You know, my neighbor's really good at mowing the lawn, or I have this friend who's really good at doing electrician stuff. Well, I am not in that sort of situation, so I had some things that I needed to have done and went researching.
And sometimes it's just even a time thing. You know, when it comes to snow plowing, which we do a lot more up here, than you may
down
there.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's definitely been some times where you're like, you know what? I just need to go on and find someone to do this for me. So you have some other ways of doing this, because for me, I've mostly gone on the services section of Craigslist and prayed that it worked out. But there might be some better options out there. So I guess so there's a couple different kinds of things, right? There's regular things like mowing your lawn or perhaps getting maid service. And there's also more repair type things like, well, fixing the electricity or the stove,
exactly,
or doing home repairs. So, go ahead and talk about some of the strategies that you've been using to work on this.
So, there are three main purveyors of service that I have looked at. One is Amazon Home Services, and it's just kind of starting out. They're growing and getting more and more professionals in the various areas that they serve. There is Home Advisor, which is really great for getting home repairs, plumbing, electricity, even some landscaping, yard work, that kind of thing. And then there's Angie's List, which was not free for a very long time, but now you can become a member for free. And it too has a very wide range of things that you can look at, anything from house cleaning to lawn services, electrician work, and even some stuff that you wouldn't necessarily think you needed. Like, I never knew that pressure washing your house was such a popular thing to do, but apparently it must be, because there's a lot of people who provide this pressure washing service.
They just like playing with the pressure washer.
Really I think that's it. Dude, I get paid to do what I love. Watch what this thing does. Exactly.
So yeah, you've been doing some of these things. So why don't you just describe a bit of the process that you've been going through, and what have you learned along the way as far as
getting
some repairs done?
So I'll start with Amazon Home Services, and unfortunately, that has been the worst of my experiences. I haven't actually gotten anything done through Amazon Home Services, but I can talk about the process. Right. There is a section on the Amazon site, or you can just do a search on Amazon for home services, and it will show you a section of subcategories depending on what sort of service you want. The upside to this is that whatever you do, whatever you schedule, you can pay for it with the same method of payment that you would normally use on Amazon. So you're not going to have to think about, am I going to have to go get cash? Do I have to write a check? Blah, blah, blah. All of that can be done right through Amazon. There are two bad parts about this, though. One is there are some accessibility concerns. I couldn't get this to work at all with NVDA. So there's a, let's say you wanted to have a fence repaired. The service will ask you about what are your measurements, if you have them, what are you looking to have done, what kind of material is your fence made of, do you want to upload pictures of it, things like that. That section was completely hidden from NVDA, so it wasn't visible at all. I could do this with JAWS, but not with NVDA, so that was kind of not cool. The other downside is that for each of the things that I tried on home services, one of them actually was for a fence repair. The other one was for a handyman, so just a couple of things that I wanted to have done that didn't really fall into a particular category, but a handyman could do all this stuff. Neither one of those things had enough people in my area. I got one response on the handyman issue requesting photos. And beyond that, I think Amazon takes about a week or so and then says, sorry, no one in your area has responded, so we're not able to we're not able to fulfill your request at this time. So that's Amazon.
That's a really good, interesting point about coverage, especially because the others that you're about to talk to, I think, have a lot more grounds in this game,
yes,
right? They've both been around
exactly
for a long time. And even in a smaller city like Kalamazoo or whatever, I could find someone on an Angie's List where I had the same issue with Amazon for everything I looked for. Well, there's no one in your area. There's no one in your area.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. I think that if you do have a situation where you're using JAWS and you live in an area where there are a lot of professionals who have signed up to work through Amazon Home Services, you might get a good experience. So it's certainly an option to look at, but be aware that you might run into the same things we did where, there's just no one there.
Okay.
So Home Advisor is the next option, and it has been around for quite some time. And as far as I know, it's always been free. It's basically a service where you can search for the kind of service that you're looking for, and you will see a list of people in your area with reviews and such. But the difference between Home Advisor and Angie's List is that with Home Advisor, you will describe your project. You'll also enter your contact information, and that contact information gets shared with businesses. For some people, that is kind of a downside. They really don't want people to have that information. They'd rather just do all the footwork themselves and make the call when they're ready. I didn't mind so much. I wasn't inundated with calls when I made my request. I had, I think, 3 or 4 calls for each item that I was looking for. And the neat thing was that I had described my project, so any of the businesses who were looking at this and wanting to provide an estimate already knew exactly what I wanted, and they could tell whether or not that was in their scope or not. And if it wasn't, they just didn't call. So that saves a lot of time where literally within 2 or 3 minutes of having submitted my request for estimates and quotes, I was getting calls rather than I look at this thing, I look at all the reviews, I call, find out they don't do what I want, and continue down the list. So it was definitely a
time saver. And you can see whether they're paying attention, too. I mean,
exactly.
If they get you get a call from someone and they start spouting off all these things that weren't in your request, then you're like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, you know immediately that, okay, you have no attention to detail, and this is not what I want.
Does it have to be a call as opposed to an email?
I believe they can send you an email. I don't recall if there is. I know you do provide your email address. All of the requests I had, they responded with a phone call. But I'm not sure. I don't recall if you can select only email me. Yeah. With HomeAdvisor, you pay the provider directly. So you have to work out with them, hey, do you take a check? Do you take a card? In my case, I had a person repair my fence, and they typically took checks, but they were willing to work with me and do PayPal, and we just did the transaction for PayPal right when the work was complete. He verified that the money arrived, and everything was great. So it's up to you to work with the provider once you've gotten connected and once they come and do an estimate for you as to how payment is going to happen, unlike Amazon, where you can just pay right through the app.
Although the thing about that, too, is I'm not sure how much price comparison you were able to do. A company on Amazon, Amazon's taking a cut of that. So it's possible that the prices could actually be higher on a service.
It is very possible, yes. Mm-hmm. And since I didn't get any estimates on Amazon, I couldn't speak to that. But what I can say about HomeAdvisor is that I had a project and I did actually get three estimates and was able to do price compares from those three. In each case, the business did have to visit my home and actually do the estimate, but I was able to, in the end, choose which one I wanted to go with based on, hey, I got all these estimates and this one came in the lowest, plus they have good reviews and I've met the people face to face, so I know, get a feeling of their professionalism and the like.
Is there a concern to you, Angie's List, I know especially, has been had a little bit of controversy. Well, this always happens with search engines and such. Like, how do they balance sponsored companies versus ones with good reviews versus, you know, everything else?
Exactly. And yeah. And that is a good point. And when I did this, I didn't see anything that was listed as sponsored or not sponsored. All they had was for Angie's List, for example, you have grades A through F, and they'll show you how many reviews it's gotten. And so it's much like any other product that's being reviewed, where you can see the number of reviews it's had, and rather than being stars, it's A through F. For HomeAdvisor, you don't really get A through F. You just get a list of reviews. And what happened with HomeAdvisor was they really wanted people to submit those reviews. Once I had had my service completed, I actually received a call from HomeAdvisor following up on my experience and asking if I would review. And since I was really happy with the service, I was glad to do that review.
And that's how they're making money of some sort.
Exactly. Yes.
Somehow, HomeAdvisor, did you alert them, or how do they know which one you picked?
I'm assuming that the provider who actually accepts the request informs HomeAdvisor of what, of, you know, who chose what, because I didn't make that selection. Now, with Angie's List, it was different. They could tell because, well, let me just back up a bit and talk about what Angie's List is. You've probably heard of this before, where it's a website and you can browse for various services, much like HomeAdvisor. The difference, though, with Angie's List is that not only can you browse for services, but there are providers who have offers and deals, and those things are listed in each category, and they're ready for you to purchase them just right there. So you can kind of do it sight unseen. I had a case where I had some tree trimming and some other things that I wanted done to just make the outside of the house look less like a jungle. And they had a package for that. And I was able to see all of the reviews from people who had done this before. And with these reviews, not only will the person describe what they had done, but in many cases, in fact, as you're filling out your Angie's List review, it asks you to provide a cost. What did you pay for the service? That is optional. You don't have to tell them how much you paid, but it is something that you can...
Really useful.
Yeah, you can enter. And so that's a nice way that HomeAdvisor did not have, that you can kind of do some price comparisons just right there by reading the review. So not only do you know that the company seems reputable and they've done a great job, but you get an idea of what their work is priced like.
And they're kind of in the middle, right? So you can, there's, like you said, there's coupons and deals that you can pay right on the website, or you could go through and pay directly for some things as well.
Exactly. And so what I ended up doing was buying a coupon directly from the site. And so they sent my contact information and my request onto the provider. And then I wanted some additional work done by the provider, and I was able to work out payment arrangements directly with them. So Angie's List doesn't get a cut of that. Yeah.
Are there certain types of projects that you find, have you had better experiences than others with, you know, certain types of projects? Does it matter? Or do you think it's just a really, these are general tools? And then which one would you pick out of all of them going forward?
Yeah, I think really it's, they're all great tools to have in the toolbox. I think that HomeAdvisor actually had more providers for exterior work, like fencing, landscaping, roofing, that kind of thing. And they both had a really wide range for things like electrician, you know, interior work, even house cleaning, painting, that kind of thing. I don't think that I would choose Amazon Home Services at this point simply because there aren't a lot of people in my area and going through the page is not the most user-friendly experience. But with HomeAdvisor and Angie's List, I think they both definitely have a place in the toolbox, and I really couldn't choose between the two. I think they're both very much worthwhile.
And I guess it depends a little bit on the service too. You know, Angie's List has all sorts of stuff. I think everything from the home stuff to like dentists. So I mean, it depends what you're looking for.
Yeah, they have a bunch of crazy
stuff. They're way beyond the home, where HomeAdvisor might be a little more niche.
Yeah, and my strategy has been to look at Angie's List for the service that I want and see if there are coupons offered there, because if there were, then I would most likely look at reviews, purchase a coupon for that provider, and go through Angie's List. And if there weren't, then, you know, it's time to look at HomeAdvisor. But I think customer service for both has been spectacular. And just the general coverage area, the amount of providers available, and the number of reviews for each of these things, a lot of people are using both. So you're going to get some really good information about what's good and what's not.
They're both longtime companies, and then they have a good reputation behind them. And we'll link to all of these in the show notes, as well as some contact information for Ricky. What might that be? If people have more questions, they want to get a hold of you.
Best place to find me is on Twitter. I'm at Ricky_Enger, E-N-G-E-R. And always happy to chat there. And I love listening to the show. It's always fun to actually be on the show as well.
Yeah, all right, cool. We'll have to find more excuses to bring you back a little more often. So thank you so much for coming back on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, JJ.
We got more coming up, including Last Word, which, well, you're just going to have to wait. First, this tip.
You know, the name Blind Bargains implies that we know a little bit about bargains around here, and occasionally I actually do know something about a bargain or two. It's mostly JJ's territory, but I have one for you today about media. I'm talking about the Humble Bundle. That's Humble with an H, Humble Bundle. They've been around for several years, and they provide some much-needed money to fantastic charities. Here's the idea. They partner with a creator, let's say Graphic Audio at graphicaudio.net, and they come up with a wonderful plethora of audiobooks, like $200 worth. And all they do is ask you to donate some money to purchase that. So let's say you could purchase, an audiobook bundle that has 10 books in it for, and this is all hypothetical, $10. And if you spend a little bit more, say $15, they'll throw in, 3 to 5 more books. And if you spend $20 or $25, they'll throw in 3 or 4 more audiobooks. It is a neat way to be able to give back to charities and get some fantastic, amazing deals at the same time. I just, this week over the recording, picked up $200 worth of Capcom games for PlayStation 3 and 4, and I pledged up to $25, and I could choose where I wanted that money to go. So in this case, you could give some to children's hospitals, or you could give some to the Red Cross. It's really cool, and they are very transparent and tell you that up front. You can actually choose what you want if you want it to go more to one organization than another. I mentioned graphic audio earlier. I've gotten some audiobooks from Big Finish. There have been some e-books available. And if you don't need this media yourself, maybe you're not a fan, but you know someone who is, like currently there's some Sierra games on sale on Steam. You can actually purchase this, give money to charity, and then send it as a gift. You can give it as a gift link, which is really neat because the holidays are coming up and that's special. Someone might want a whole bunch of old Sierra games like King's Quest to be able to play, and Gabriel Knight and others. Now, these bundles are very limited. They have a certain amount of a window, say 2 weeks, sometimes a month, but mostly 2 weeks. So you have to hop on them fast. You can join a newsletter and keep up to date on what's available. You can also subscribe to their RSS feed. They even have a store for deals all time round. So you can actually buy things and donate at the same time while you're doing all of this. Humble Bundle, have a link in the show notes. It is fantastic, and I like it a whole bunch, and I have gotten tons of media and also giving back to charity at the same time. Check them out, look at their FAQ, see what you think. Humblebundle.com.
It's your turn to sound off. Email feedback at blindbargains.com or tweet us at blindbargains.
Lots of sound off this week in lots of different places. I'll start with the email. Linda writes in, do any of the new note takers have manuals instead of user guides? And I'm looking, manual, user guide, that's the same thing. But she's saying, well, to me or to her, a manual gives a lot more detail on step-by-step instructions and things like that, where user guides are more terse. Now, I guess no matter what you call them, forget the semantics of the word. But I guess making the point that, in her opinion, at least, some of the more modern products, sometimes people tend to shortcut documentation, and that could be a big roadblock, especially for new users who kind of might need things spelled out and can't just go by a 2 or 4 page guide to explain the entire note taker, especially something as big as like a Braille sensor or a Braille note. Those things need, whatever you call them, some good documentation. There's tutorials out there, depending on what the Braille Note Touch has, a nice free tutorial that came with it.
Mystic Access.
I'm not the best person. I do training here and there. It's one of my things. I know you've done some a little bit here and there.
Yep.
To me, the note takers especially have done a pretty good job of explaining things. When I look at the manuals, I know when I looked at the one for the Blaze, it was pretty detailed as far as what it covered. So maybe it depends on the note taker and are some, obviously I'm sure some manuals and docs are written better than others.
And some people are much better at being self-learners. Some people can figure it out on their own or just use something like that. But if you're looking for something that is more detailed or you prefer one-on-one training,
then yeah, that's and she even mentions that. She's like, is there actually other companies that can come to my house and perhaps demonstrate? Well, that depends on, I don't know where you live. If you send us back an email.
It depends if you live near a dealer as well.
Right, exactly. If if you live in a major metro, sometimes that's more possible. Going to a state convention of sorts or local user groups, sometimes those have exhibit halls. So those will, you can at least look at 2 or 3 of them. There's some ways, but let us know where you're from. Maybe we can try to help you out a little bit.
And you can go to some of the websites like Freedom Scientific's website, and I believe HIMSS and others, and actually look to see if there's a local dealer in your area, or maybe there's an event in your area from one of those companies, and then you can kind of get your hands on one. I do stress that it is a good idea if you can, as Jay reminds me sometimes, to go lay your hands on one. And before you drop some major coin on that, that is a lot of money to be able to kind of sort of go, oops, buyer's remorse, yikes. So training-wise, same thing goes. You might want to check with the companies themselves. They sometimes recommend trainers in your area if they know of any. There are also some other good training materials that are out there if you do, you know, general Google searches. Not all trainers, sadly, are not created equal. I am one of these people that do not and kind of brush my feathers against the idea of a quote-unquote certification for assistive technology. And I'll explain this real quick. Training moves so fast. And let's take Windows 10, for example. It's hard to keep up with things as fast as they happen in Office or Windows 10 land, and there's no way you can test someone's knowledge well enough in order for someone to, no, quote-unquote, definitively be the person who understands said thing. I mean, there's a new version of JAWS every year. There are quarterly updates to NVDA. It's like catching sand in a colander, as I used to say a lot when I was at the Division for Blind Services. So having some static, finite kind of diploma or certification and or otherwise term to designate that you are a trainer of some quality is a great idea, but I've just never been a big fan of it because I don't think it's really there to last.
It's really hard. I understand exactly where you're coming from. It's really hard to certify in that way. I prefer more the certifications, or at least the idea. The most important skills for training for me are the willingness to adapt and to learn ahead of the customer and then teach the customer what you've just learned. Because, you know, because sometimes someone's going to bring you a piece of technology that you've never really dealt with before. But, you know, to be able to really ramp up on it quickly and understand it and then convey that knowledge to someone in a way that they can understand, that's where it, I think, becomes important. Because, you know, you're never going to know every single product.
Exactly.
But can you learn
it? And sometimes it is exactly what you're saying. Can you create a lesson plan? Can you help someone make it through that lesson plan? Can you set goals and achieve those goals? There's so much to training that it is hard to encapsulate. You know, sometimes there is some tech support. By the time you get out there to someone's house, meet with them, find out that they've been using, let's just say, for since we're on the old technology kick for the moment, LimeWire or Kazaa, can you sit down and, you know, get all the bad software off their machine before you can even begin training? Sometimes it is very much like that. So, and a good trainer, and I was, you know, vice president of the assistive technology trainers division, a good trainer has to be able to go to someone's house, train somebody with no air conditioning at 90 degrees, and then get cleaned up and go out to a major, you know, Fortune 500
with the dogs running around in the other room and the kids crying in the bathroom. It's not a glamorous
life. But to get to get back to the question at hand from the email, there are resources, and write us back. We can give you some more ideas, but definitely look to the companies themselves, because a lot of companies have trainers that they've worked with before, and Freedom Scientific has a huge training department, actually.
Yes, definitely.
Yep, and great materials over at AI Squared as well.
What did you put here? We've got a whole bunch of stuff from Beth.
Just so we know. Blind Bargains. You've got another email? Because I had
No, that is her. Beth is Bargain Hound. That's Beth.
Oh.
Or Beth.
Hi, Bargain Hound. Bargain Hound talks a little bit about having need for Braille displays and the like. But this is the bigger question here in the second one. The recognition that technology does change and the like, but does VoiceOver need as many updates, or do things fall out from under VoiceOver when things are changing? It depends here on apps and then Safari. Some companies base their apps are kind of like wrappers on a web. You know, there's like a website and then the app interacts with it and it's kind of a wrapper. Some people actually just take you straight to the website and that has its own issues. Safari can change. VoiceOver can change. Apps can change. The technology that's behind apps can change. We're about to have iOS 10, and sometimes developers do have to make some changes in order for VoiceOver to work with their stuff. You may even hold off, say, a couple of weeks to a month if you can, to let everybody else jump in the pool on iOS 10, because there has been in the past some nasty bugs that have gotten people. I'm thinking of the dialing bug and then the receiving bug. That was the bad one from a couple of iOS versions ago where you couldn't actually get to the accept button.
There's a lot of moving pieces as far as, yes, does Apple software just necessarily work better with VoiceOver and all that? Well, yeah, there's a lot of pieces that all kind of come together to make that happen. And right now, there happens to be some really good involvement and cohesion between the different teams at Apple, so that seems to work, especially on iOS. We hear a little more grumblings on the Mac side that things, perhaps more recently, depending on the area, haven't been kept up as much. But
Twitter's a perfect example, though. If you're using the Mac, a lot of people were very depressed that the new version of Night Owl wasn't working very well or better than it used to on Twitter. And that's a, you know, a version, a client that can actually interact with Twitter. If developers of any kind, be it Microsoft, Apple, what have you, Google, if they're interacting and building their apps and the guidelines that are offered by these companies, then you have a fairly decent chance that that technology will work on the built-in side. But again, with screen readers on Windows, that's a whole different thing, because you're talking about years of legacy.
That's an apples to plums comparison.
And Apple has the ability to shut the door and say, look, you don't have to worry about these versions of these products anymore. You don't have to worry about these versions of iOS anymore. Here's your minimum level that you have to support. Android does this too. Microsoft and Microsoft developers, here's one for you. Did you know that as of today, the day we're recording, Dropbox just officially announced the end of support for Windows XP? Yeah, so they were supporting Windows 10 anniversary all the way back to Windows XP at the time of this recording. That's a lot for a developer, and there are some changes. So it is, again, like comparing apples and oranges. I hate to use that phrase in this quiz. So that gives you an idea. So nothing's perfect, and it's good that it's not. And it's good that there are changes happening, because it usually results in better accessibility for all of us. Minus a couple of caveats.
And
there we go. Any more in sound?
No, that's about it. I think we'll hold it off for. We got a lot next week.
I agree.
Got a little iOS show coming up
after that. Yeah, that Apple show is coming right on the Verizon, and then
this will be a nice quick show next week. Yep, right on the Verizon. Oh,
yeah.
That's okay. Last word. More music here. So what do you got? This is another musical headline here.
Do you like this one?
I read the headline. I haven't listened to this yet. Is there a clip here?
A millennial whoop apparently is some tonalizations. I'm going to screw this up so bad. Between the fifth and the third, a glorious obsession with the melodic alternations between the fifth and the third. Now, I mangled that pretty badly, but this article does a really good job of explaining the kind of two-note thing that people have started to do. It's kind of an earworm of sorts.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That. And it goes back to kind of giving an idea that maybe it was Katy Perry that kind of really got it back in vogue. It has a link to a very NSFO.
Oh, and that's California Girls song.
And there's an NSFW video to a Lonely Island song that didn't make their pop star movie that also really plays on that. It's a big parody of it, but lots of dirty words. But otherwise, this article has a lot to show you about what, you know, was happening as far as musical trends go. Kind of goes with what I was talking about a couple of weeks ago about Future and how people said that other people were stealing his style. So I kind of find these articles at time and become very enamored with them, because they do a really good job of explaining why that seems to be a thing with pop music. And I heard a lot of pop music on the radio on the way over from Texas. So therefore I thought this article was very fascinating, and I've never heard it called the millennial whoop.
No.
There it is.
I can leave that term right there and don't feel like I have to hear it again. There's a lot of examples of that, though. That is definitely.
Yeah, why I like this article. Music emulates itself. Really show that.
Music definitely emulates itself, but that's kind of a. I didn't have much until I saw this. Not a huge story, but a question to pose to you. What are you doing at 4 a.m.?
Tonight? Hopefully sleeping.
Or any day. Well, this article says you shouldn't be. Bunch of quotes here, and I've heard this a little bit before, from the most successful entrepreneurs who get their most work done at 4 a.m.
Yeah,
which I was excited about until I read that this meant getting up at 4 a.m., not staying up until 4 a.m.
If you could just speak into your dream journal and then roll over and go back to sleep, that would rock.
The idea of being they get up before everybody else and they can start, you know, they don't have the morning distractions and everything, social media and everything else to kind of get in their way. They get up and get rolling an hour or two. And the flip side of that is you have to go to bed earlier.
That is true. So no more partying until 4 a.m. because then you wouldn't be the most productive. Kyle has to get up for his high school transit at like 6:30 is when his motorized transport leaves. Therefore, we're up around here now around 5:45, if the family will allow me to go any earlier than that. Otherwise, they will probably put a pillow over my face and finish that problem. But I have no trouble in getting up at 4 or 5. In fact, I was like ready to go on this past trip earlier. So I didn't used to be that way.
So you're willing to try this out for a week?
You know, maybe it will try itself out whether I want it to or not. It all depends these days. That may not be a voluntary situation. It all depends. I tend to adopt this though when it gets colder, and I do not know why. The temperature does have a tendency to make me want to get up earlier, and it's interesting. But I do agree with some of this. I like the quiet time, that whole 3 to 6 a.m. kind of window, especially if you put on something really good, some ambient music. Yeah, I can go with that. You?
I will be up at 4. It probably won't be getting up at 4, though. I might still be up at 4.
4 p.m.? He's okay. All over. Notice that?
4 p.m. Yeah. Yes, I am available any day at 4 p.m. I don't schedule meetings at 8 a.m. Anyone who knows me knows
struggling that. Struggling musician getting up at 4 p.m. There you go.
You can schedule. I've scheduled meetings and things like that with people. I'm using other time zones, but like at like 10, 11 o'clock at night before. You know, it's happened. So I'm not going to. I can't deny that at all.
It all depends. Depends who your audience is. When I started off in radio, I had the Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. shift for a while, but I also did some 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. And then my favorite was 10 p.m. till 5:30 a.m. So I've done those late night. Yeah, some of it was automated, which was awesome. That part was really, really good. But the problem was you had to stay awake during the automation. So the just girl that I was working with at the time introduced me to coffee. And I actually do have some air check tapes of me starting off like, and then coming just 2 a.m.
You should find, I would love to hear some Joe air checks on a future show at some point. Oh, that could get interesting.
I have a bunch of these cassettes in this box over here. I'm quite afraid there's interviews of Pantera and other bands and over there in that box. It's very, very scary what's going to be over
interesting
there.
Interesting stuff for the tubes.
Just had to do that. So there was other news that happened that we didn't put in the show notes. You can find all that out if you follow me over on Twitter, twitter.com/RangerStation, all one word. You'll be able to read a little bit more about the not only accessibility, but a lot about video games, which is what I'm obsessed with at the moment. And sometimes even more about regular mainstream technology.
I sent you one. I'm not sure. You see people? That?
Which
one? I sent you a video game link.
Did you?
Yeah. Ooh. You have to go look at that. Cool. I DM'd it to you a couple of days ago. Someone did this accessible overlay for a game, but I'll let you investigate.
Matt May and I were talking back and forth about Xbox controllers. He has a nice red one. That looks really cool. Probably goes with the Gears of War 4 set. Nice. Also, he too also said that he was bracing for impact on his wallet. Because we have the Apple and the PlayStation event on the same day. My geek streams converge. So if you do follow me on Twitter, just a warning, because this always comes as a surprise to some people. I don't know how, but I am a little bit of a snarky person on Apple event days. Well, just generally event days, but specifically Apple event days, I tend to turn up the snark to about 11. So if you do follow, I tend to tweet in real time things during the video broadcast. So it tends to get kind of funny.
I'm running the Blind Bargains Twitter. That's twitter.com/blindbargains. If you have any comments on Apple as the event is unfolding, feel free to tweet them out or tag us at Blind Bargains. And we might read some of those on our
hashtag #AppleBBQ, right? That's it. Or BBQ, you know, Apple?
Well, you know, I really was thinking that we at some point we should do a BB cast hashtag and monitor it.
Careful with those words.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree.
Cash tag. I'm down with a cash tag, too.
That's nice. I like
email
those.
support@atguys.com for that. You can email feedback@blindbargains.com for blind bargains feedback. And then as AT Guys, which I just mentioned, if you wanted to buy stuff for your new iPhone 7, because you're going to need some Bluetooth headsets because there won't be a headphone jack, you can get those like the Aftershocks and some others over at atguys.com. That's ATGUYS.com.
Hey, you could also pair things like a Smart Beetle to that brand new iPhone. You can learn about that and so much more over at HIMS website. That's HIMS-INC.com. That's HIMS-INC.com. That will take you over there.
Yes, HIMS-INC.com. Don't forget the dash.
Well, I turned my verbosity down a little bit, so I just ignored punctuation.
It's HIMS-INC.com. Gotcha.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. Just see how
thank
that.
You. Nice. Thanks, Ricky, for coming on the show.
Yeah.
Always good to talk to her. And Patrick, who actually doing even more, is already doing a lot of producing the show, but he actually even came on the show as well to talk about HD Madness. So thank you so much, both of you, for coming on. And we really appreciate it. And get ready for Apple.
Absolutely. Now, remember, CAV is constant angular velocity. And CLV is constant linear velocity, Jay. These are important because CLV means you can fit an hour of video on one side of a laser disc. And CAV means you can only fit 30 minutes of video on one side of a laser disc. Because then you'd have to get up and pop it out and flip it over and put it back in. So it's good to know that.
Somebody please take Joe's laser discs off his hands.
Or your pizzas, you know, so that way you knew how long you had to sit on your butt before you had to get up and flip the disc over.
Sure, if you gave him a buck a piece, he'd take it.
You never know. Have a good week, everybody.
Bye-bye.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2016.